Hello, and welcome to IRI Growth Insights, featuring IRI thought leaders, industry partners, and guests. For more than 40 years, IRI has been known for its invaluable data, but these podcasts delve into the insights the data reveal to fuel market disruption and market growth for those in the CPG, retail, healthcare, and media markets. I'm your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from IRI's corporate headquarters in Chicago. Hello, and welcome back to IRI's Growth Insights podcast. I'm joined again today by Jessica Lucas of BDS Analytics and Chris van der Linden here of IRI, who will be talking about the business case for cannabis. Chris van der Linden is an executive with our Market and Shopper Intelligence Group. He is all things protein, dairy bakery, beer, wine, spirits, and tobacco. Chris felt that with beer, wine, and spirits and tobacco, this is where he sees tremendous impact with cannabis and has worked to strengthen and build the relationship IRI has with BDS Analytics. Jessica Lucas is the Senior Vice President of Commercial Development at BDS Analytics, based in Boulder, Colorado. She is focused on pulling together the product offering that works for major tobacco, alcohol, and CPG companies. So welcome back, and thanks for joining me, Chris and Jessica. Chris, I want to start with you because our first conversation that we had really talked about kind of like the groundwork of where we are with cannabis. But now I want to talk about the business case. And you had mentioned that there's so many different levels of commitment that you're seeing companies make. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about that.
First of all, great. Thank you for having me. It's good to be back with you and Jessica. I think the way that we've approached this, I mean, I guess the first thing I would say is it's very dynamic, right? When we first started having these conversations, there were just a few companies that were expressing interest, and now it seems many, many more are. So I would expect that dynamism to continue as we progress and as this marketplace matures. I think the most obvious thing is that there are certain strata or segments maybe of clients, and there's a tier one set. I think they're the ones that we all probably know who've made significant investments either in partnerships in Canada with producers up there, and have been doing that for a number of years. So I think those are the known ones. We see those oftentimes in the business journals, et cetera, et cetera. I think the second set of clients are people who are very well educated on the space and have been actively innovating and creating products and are really waiting for there to be some clarity, I think, in the marketplace and waiting for their sort of go decision. And I know that, we've worked with those people, and I know for a fact that BDS Analytics has spent quite a bit of time with them. And then there's a third tier of people that are keeping an eye on the development of the entire space. A lot of people that are wanting to see how it unfolds before they make any real major capital decisions about getting involved. And then I think sort of the last level is people that are trying to understand what impact, if any, there's going to be on their base business. So I think there are those segments or those levels of people or tiers, if you will, of clients in terms of their involvement and acceptance and how aggressive they're being in working in the space. So I think we certainly do see that.
So you mentioned that tier two, the companies who you're working with who are waiting, and in your words, to make a go decision. So what are they waiting for? Because there's so much going on. Is there a fear? Are we talking about the FDA? What constitutes a go decision?
I certainly think that they are looking, I think they're definitely looking at the FDA to make a definitive statement about CBD as a food additive. So yeah, I think that's exactly their point of view. But I do think that they want a first mover advantage, or close to first mover advantage. So they are trying to do a lot of the their homework, if you will, in creating and exploring the space and creating and exploring different concepts in the space. And so I do think once there is some clarity there, there will be that go decision. And you know, you may want to ask Jessica that question, because I do think that there are potentially other contributing factors to their go decision or their no go decision.
Yeah, I think in addition, obviously, to the FDA stance on CBD as a food additive and where that's going to go, you also have longstanding stigmas, beliefs on this space and what this means. And so there's a lot of effort across organizations to convince senior leadership, board members, decision makers that this is the right move to make. Luckily, the market size is a big indicator of this is a move that a lot of companies should make. But, you know, they are weighing their reputation, their base business, preconceived notions, I hate to say it, but conservative beliefs on this, especially companies that have, you know, parent entities, boards that are in other countries. You know, the U.S. is so far beyond kind of the thinking of other countries in terms of legalization and acceptance of legalization, and not all countries buy into that. I mean, in some countries, cannabis is still seen as very similar to heroin. And so those are big hurdles for these companies to overcome. Even if there's a big market opportunity, they might not be willing to potentially risk their reputation globally to make a move in an uncertain hemp-derived CBD marketplace in the U.S.
Well, and I would say, too, that just some of the recent activity here in the U.S. with the FDA sending out, like really ramping up and sending out a lot of warnings, must have some of these companies a little nervous.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of, obviously, the biggest retailers and the biggest manufacturers haven't made a move here. Because it is gray area legal, and they have a lot to lose by moving into a space that's gray area legal. The companies you see getting letters are companies founded to create products just in this space. So they don't have another business that's potentially at risk by doing this. You know, there's a lot of companies that aren't on that list of letters, though. There are a lot of companies creating hemp-derived CBD products and doing it the right way, and doing third-party testing themselves and ensuring that the products contain what they say it has on the packaging, and also not overstating claims, because that's where a lot of these organizations are getting in trouble with, is either they're overstating what's in the product or they're overstating the benefits of the product. And that's what these companies have to be very careful of.
The FDA is looking at food claims in particular, supplements. People, like some of these companies are clearly, you know, I would agree with what the FDA is saying. It's like these companies are making claims about these products that we can't prove.
Yeah, and that's what will be really interesting. I mean, hopefully we see some definitive answers from the FDA in the next 6 months. I don't know, people might laugh at that positive outlook of mine of hoping to see that come through. But consumers are already confused. The marketplace is already confused by all of this. So it does need to be regulated in a way that it makes sense, it's honest, it's truthful. And when you pick up a beverage product or a gummy product or a pill or a topical in a store, in a mainstream retail store, you know as a consumer what you're going to get. And right now it's a little bit of the Wild West.
Yeah. I would also, you know, one of the things that I wanted to throw out there too, Joan, was that I feel like we've broken the decision down, at least as we think about it. It's broken down into a binary decision, right, which is go, defined as innovating and adding, you know, hemp-derived CBD or whatever to your product line, or to not do that. And I think that there are potential interim steps that other clients are evaluating. So in other words, understanding what happens in general retail outlets that are near dispensaries as they open is certainly something that our partnership could provide for a client, so that you could begin to understand what truly is the impact on our business. And that, I don't think in any instance there that you're treading in a gray area of legality, right? So you could use your regular products, you could use our intelligence to help you make some decisions about, understanding what's happening and then making some decisions about what you're going to do about that. And do all those things without doing anything about infusing CBD into your product line.
So Chris, let's talk a little bit more about that. Let's get some examples. Are you saying, you know, for companies that are taking a wait and see approach, maybe that they have complementary products, you know, maybe there are products that you would want to consume like in partnership with CBD or cannabis products? Tell me a little bit, like,
I certainly think that that's the case. I mean, I think Jess will be able to give you much greater detail about this, because I think what I would call regular product or food product sales inside of a dispensary is a bit of a patchwork quilt. I think each of the localities has their own rules about that. But in terms of convenience stores or drug stores or grocery stores that are in close proximity to, say, a dispensary, it might make some real sense to begin it, you know, to gain an understanding about how consumers use those products general retail products in a situation where they've just visited a dispensary or are going to visit a dispensary. And understanding the consumer interaction between those two things is a smart move that doesn't require a whole lot of legal risk.
Yeah. And that's a really good call out too. And I'm going to say something that, you know, maybe I shouldn't, because it definitely speaks to a stigma. But for those of you who have consumed marijuana, munchies do exist. And so let's not ignore the fact that that is something that comes for some people with consuming cannabis. And there are products and brands out there that fit nicely with that kind of scenario. To Chris's point, there's a lot of movement there. That's a potential. I would also say we have to be very careful. We're not telling every company to enter this space. We're tracking it. We're looking at it. We're really in deep in understanding consumer behavior and beliefs and attitudes and kind of need states and occasions of consumption. And it's not fitting for every company. The one thing I would call out, though, is there's a lot you can learn by the things that are happening and what's being innovated in the dispensary. Now, a word like terpenes becomes a consumer-friendly language. And guess what? Terpenes exist outside of cannabis. You have lavender terpenes and citrus terpenes and pine terpenes, flavors and aromas that are coming from plants. Talked a lot about within cannabis, both cannabis or marijuana-derived terpenes, but also what we call botanical terpenes. And that becomes a new language. And so now all of a sudden, companies don't have to infuse products with cannabinoids, but they can think about terpenes in that language. They can understand why consumers are utilizing CBD or THC products and innovate in a completely different direction. And a lot of smart companies, and we see it a lot, I would say, in beverages, are thinking about that. What are the healthier, better for you, mood and effect positive products that you can launch? And we're seeing innovation happen. And so, again, this doesn't have to be somebody needs to put a cannabinoid, a CBD, a THC, a CBN, a CBG in a beverage. This could be get educated, understand these occasions and need states, understand the product, and innovate in a different way.
And I do recall, like, our last conversation, we talked about a lot of the compounds that are emerging. You know, like, we've got THC, we have CBD, but there are so many others. And they speak, I think, a little more directly to your point, to what some of these companies are already producing. Like, what makes the most sense? You're right. This is not a space for every company, but it certainly does make sense for a lot of them, because they're so complementary and they just make sense to extend a brand or extend product innovation into this space. So I would like to talk about a little bit of what some of those indicators are of what makes sense for some of these companies. There's a lot of innovation going on out there that we aren't really seeing, but what kind of guidance can we provide to some of these companies to say, here's some of the things you should be looking at? Maybe it's a category, maybe it is some of those moods that you're addressing, but how should companies be looking at what they're currently successful at and see where the migration into cannabis could be for them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the nice thing with the BDS Analytics and IRI partnership is now we have a seamless integration of all products being sold across all retail channels. So grocery, drug, mass, convenience, club, and now the dispensary as another channel to purchase cannabinoid-infused products. So now all of a sudden, we have an unprecedented look at legal cannabis. I don't care if it's hemp-derived or marijuana-derived, but we're going to call it legal cannabis. And so being able to track and watch that market change and grow is really important. The one watch out is, sorry, Chris, I'm going to call it out, but right now the product assortment available in general market retail is very limited, in a lot of cases to topical application. And so that's where the dispensary channel becomes very fascinating. And it's funny to say this because it's not really that true, but in comparison to the hemp-derived CBD marketplace, the dispensary channel, the regulated marijuana market, is a mature industry. And so you look at that and you can understand product formats, dosage, branding, messaging, packaging that have worked really well over the last 5 years in fully legal markets. And that's where a lot of very interesting insight can come from of what is the right product format. For companies who don't understand the cannabinoid marketplace and haven't taken a look at the dispensary channel, they're not really going to understand where this marketplace is going. Because the dispensary channel, again, has been an evolving CBD marketplace for well over 5 years. Obviously, adult use recreational marijuana being legalized first in Colorado in January 2014, but the medical markets go back decades. And so there's a lot of interesting findings that can come from understanding the product formats, the dosage, the communication that makes sense to consumers as it pertains to a THC product, but also as it pertains to a CBD product.
Right. Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, as it relates to innovation, you know, I do think I'll probably switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about our process in the sense that we have – you know, we've built an innovation practice that works with our clients, number one, at really defining the market space. Number two, finding white space within the landscape of the market. And then taking concepts, multiple concepts, and then determining which one's going to be the most likely succeeder in that group. And so that process that we've outlined in innovation in you know, regular general retail products is something that we are all also applying, you know, in the cannabis space as well. And so, you know, one of the things that we hear an awful lot about when we go around and talk about it is that there are questions that we may ask in some of the research that we do that people may be less than forthcoming with because, you know, it still is illegal. But one of the things that we work on is something called prediction markets, which in this case is very, very useful because it says, what do you think that other people will do? So you're not defining what you do, but you're defining what other people will do. And so that's just one of the techniques that we can use in our innovation suite that can be applied here in an area, not only like beer, wine, spirits, and tobacco, but also add cannabis to that where people would – you would think would be less than forthcoming with honest answers. So at any rate, I would say that the partnership between BDS Analytics and IRI brings together, obviously, the expertise in the cannabis space that you hear when you hear Jessica talk, along with the expertise in the innovation space that we bring from our regular CPG manufacturing experience.
And I think, too, that if, you know, we're looking at a market that, you know, Jessica, you may call it mature at 5 years, like in the dispensary channel, but I think that there have been other categories that have gone well before us or, you know, that well before cannabis and cannabinol, and that is be responsible, be knowledgeable. You can be a little bit conservative in terms of how you're claiming it, but I really think it's more responsible rather than conservative, because it is taking the high road and doing the right thing for the customer in that retail space is going to be what I think wins the day. And it's the companies that right now are getting letters that are clearly mislabeling, just kind of throwing stuff out there. You know, it's almost like going back to snake oil. You know, those are the things that are giving the market a bad name, and they have to be weeded out. But for companies that are really taking the solid approach and making good business decisions, there's so much opportunity here. And that's kind of like my take on what we're seeing right now.
I certainly think that our clients, our manufacturing clients, our retailers, in general retail that we work with, I would go as far as to say they have a very, they have a responsibility, I think, as players in the space to monitor what's going on, to understand and how things are growing. You know, the canary, if you will, in the mine, from my perspective, is what's happening in the dispensary, because it's absolutely an indicator of what's going to happen in general retail. So if you're going to, if you have any, if you have a business that's in any way going to be impacted, then you have the responsibility, as far as I think we're concerned, to keep eyes on what's going on in the development of that business.
Right. And I think, as you know, Jessica and both of you pointed out, there are opportunities even for companies that don't necessarily want to play in this space. You know, some of those complementary things, you know, Jessica, you mentioned munchies, but I could also think of things like sleep and mood and some of those terpenes. You know, that aromatherapy is around for a reason. So there are just so many other opportunities for companies, despite the level of commitment that you want to make to cannabis. Accurate?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, as we think about supporting clients, regardless of what stage or level they're on that Chris outlined, there's answers for everyone. And some of those answers are tracking products being sold and understanding exactly what's happening in the market, because these companies have their own products. Those are going to be, you know, the ones furthest along. But you back up and you understand, you know, even those who are just assessing the risk to their current business. The partnership with BDS Analytics and IRI is committed to tracking and understanding in the most detailed way possible the impact that legal cannabis is having on categories like beer, wine, and spirits, and tobacco, and OTC products, and skincare products, because that's really important. And when you're talking about a $45 billion cannabinoid industry by 2024, there is going to be an impact across all of these different industries. So again, whether it's helping with innovation, whether it's tracking products in market, or whether it's understanding that risk, that's what we're aiming to solve for our clients.
That's great. All right, with that, I'm going to say thank you. Until I hope we get to talk again soon, because there's, again, so many other opportunities, including retail channels, that I'd really like to talk with you about. So, Jessica and Chris, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please become a subscriber and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up in a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at iriworldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.